Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed your lunch. This is Module 5, Day 3. Module 5, we're going to start in Advanced Contracts for Windows 8. That's not, that'd be awesome. That's awesome.
Are you giving it what you got?
That's right.
Totally lost its head.
Let's see. I want to tell everybody they can download the code and go through all this, especially in this next section where we're going to have a lot of interesting things. You can get that at xaml.codeplex.com. Don't forget, there's a new poll. And anything else?
Nope. I think we're ready to hit Advanced Contracts Part 1.
Excellent. Okay.
As you can see, we've started the second half. It's all downhill from here. Advanced Contracts Part 1, where you will see us slip into a food coma, and Advanced Contracts Part 2, where we will be in a food coma.
Wait till you see Media in 7.
Exactly. Media and Advanced Features in 8. I think everybody should be looking forward to that one, because we may well be horizontal.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so there's a lot of different contracts in Windows 8. We're going to talk about specifically a few, kind of break it up, because they're pretty, some of them can be pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to want them in as many apps as we can, so we don't want to rush through them. We've been rushing a lot in a lot of these modules. We want to take it easy on these so we can make sure and communicate everything you need as a developer to actually implement this for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, some of the integrations, such as the secondary tiles, very simple, very straightforward.
Yeah, right, a couple lines and you're done.
Exactly.
And then we're going to be talking about print and settings. Print would be an example of a contract that's less straightforward.
Yes.
Yes, all right.
Absolutely.
Certainly, it can be done.
It's very rich.
Yeah.
It can do a heck of a lot, but you have some legwork to do, as we all go through.
There's a reason they call it work.
Indeed.
We're about to show you why.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about the print contract. And Darren, the print contract is made up of a series of APIs and processes and blah, blah, blah.
So
but help me understand it. I'm going to play the role of I don't know how to do a print contract.
You do it so well. So, fundamentally, as you mentioned, the basic API is around two key classes.
Yeah.
The print manager class, which as the name suggests, manages printing.
Okay.
And is responsible for the soup to nuts process that we'll be actually going through. The other key object in this orchestration, if you like, is the print document. Okay. Now, as the name again suggests, this represents the actual document that's going to be printed. Now, you may go, aha, but I'm not printing a document. I want to print an image. Well,
right.
Everything goes into the print document.
Okay.
Okay? The key property on print document that the print manager needs to be aware of is the document source. And this is what creates a relationship between the print manager and the print document.
Does this have anything to do with XAML?
This has very little to do with XAML as it stands right now, but we will certainly touch on where XAML is incorporated into the whole printing infrastructure.
I can print XAML?
You can print XAML.
Okay. Okay.
The other two objects that we talk about on here is the print task, which as the name suggests is the print task that print manager is managing. And there are some options that we get, print task options, and these provide the metrics associated with the page that we're going to print out to. Okay. So those are the kind of key API elements that are associated with printing. And bear in mind that obviously this is around integrating a XAML-based printing solution. There are other considerations that you could make in terms of you're building a printing solution. You could choose to use HTML and CSS. You could choose to use an online web-based rendering system and print that. In many respects, HTML and CSS could be a better option for you. If you think about HTML and CSS...
Oh, okay. So you don't mean you can print in a XAML project or you could print in an HTML project. You're saying printing can be rendered either as XAML or as HTML.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and you can leverage... what I was going to say was HTML and CSS, they're really designed around formatting documents and making them available for printing, so it could be a better solution for you. Mm-hmm. But we're going to focus on leveraging the print manager and using XAML as our source for our printing.
Makes sense.
So other things you should consider about is, although you could just print your existing UI, effectively a print screen if you like, that is not optimized for printing. You know, typically we're using things in a landscape orientation, although obviously with a tablet you can move it into a portrait scenario. We're designing our applications for best viewing and presentation on a screen. Once we transfer content onto paper, we have to think about things in a different sense. You know, they're being printed on a medium that is generally white, although it could be other colors. We won't necessarily want to, although Windows Store applications have very little Chrome, UI elements such as buttons and so on and so forth don't make much sense if they're printed out onto a printed document. So we probably want to strongly consider having a custom view for printing content.
So don't do a print screen. That's not what we're trying to do.
Don't do a print screen. The other thing to think about is that there is some legwork that you need to do as part of implementing this contract, in that pagination is not something that you get for free. You will need to look at the content. You will need to look at how you're rendering it and determine whether it fits on a single page or more pages. If you don't do pagination and you send out everything, then it will be clipped effectively to the printing boundaries of the single page, and that's all that will be output. Mm. So again, you need to consider these things, and to be honest, pagination can be very complex. We're actually going to use a relatively simple example here that is a single page, because frankly we don't have the time to go all the way through the infrastructure associated with printing out content dynamically and then doing measures and working out which pages goes on. I do have a link out to a great article that's on the web that does go through this in more detail and show you how to use that, and I'll show that on screen later on. But bear that in mind, that do not think that this is a 2-minute feature that you can just throw in your application just before you ship it.
This is a 3-minute feature.
Absolutely, 3.5 maybe.
By pagination, You do mean pagination, just for everybody else that might be
for those who
trying
speak
to tra- you know, in case variants, localization hasn't kicked in and the resource file is not available.
They're globalized. So the other two key aspects are a preview, that whenever you are previewing your source, you need to supply some information that represents the current page that's being previewed in the dialog, and we'll see that in a moment. And also you need to handle rendering for adding your pages for the actual print job. So if we move on to this next slide, here is a kind of a schematic that shows you the overall printing architecture. What we have up here is an image of our detail page, which is the area of the application that does printing. When we start setting up our printing architecture, the first thing we're going to create is a print document. This is the container for all the elements that are actually going to be printed. And so we create an instance of that.
And what's the trigger to cause this first step?
I generally actually initialize this as part of setting up the print infrastructure. I need to register my page as being participatory in the printing architecture, and so I need a print document, and I also need a print manager, which is the very next step.
Okay.
So I create an instance of print manager, and I basically request a print manager that I want a print manager instance that represents the current view. And so that gives me an object instance. Once I then initiate printing, and I've got a couple of ways I can do that, we have a print button on the app bar that we can select, and that all that does is request that the print UI be displayed. The other way we can do it is we can navigate into the devices menu and bring up and select printers.
Before you go any further, the print document that I create, so print document and print manager are both handled in the initialization, loading, or whatever it is at the beginning of the page, when the original page is rendered. And the print document is empty at this time?
Yep, it's just basically a container where printing elements will appear. And as we go through this process, you'll see the next step. So if our next step is we actually select and display the print UI, what then happens is we get a print task requested event raised by the print manager. And what we actually then do is, as part of that, we get supplied a callback signature that we need to hand off the print document source to the print manager. And this ties those two together so that the print manager now has a print document that is going to manage through the remainder of this cycle.
I see.
Okay.
So the print document and the print manager hadn't been associated until now.
Until now.
And print task requested is an event that's raised when they select the printer?
Nope, when they select the print UI.
Oh, so it's when just the fact that it's visible.
Correct.
Okay.
That then starts to hook these things up. Because then the next thing we do is we select an output device. So in this scenario, we're selecting the Microsoft XPS Document Writer.
Yeah.
Once we select an output device, then we have access to the properties and constraints of that output device, such as whether it's loaded with letter paper, whether that paper is in portrait or landscape, and so on and so forth. And these are vital metrics that we need in order to format our document for printing.
You can't do pagination before you know the size of the page.
Exactly.
This is telling you the size.
And so, funnily enough, this raises a paginate event on the print document. Mm. Passed into the paginate event are the is a series of objects that contain these metrics that we then leverage when we do our pagination algorithm.
What is the print document? Is it a container of text, or
it can be whatever you like. In actual fact, as we see on the diagram, that we can bring in XAML and we can create an instance of a XAML document which we can then bind our data to. And then what we can do during the paginate, and we'll show this in a little bit more detail, is we can then encourage that XAML document to size itself to the constraints of the print source. So we know we're printing out to an XPS document. We'll assume that that is printing out letter. We assume that there's a printable margin defined around that, or a printable region, rather, defined within that document, and that we need to fit our print content into those constraints.
So I see you're putting XAML into the print document. Then you reach into the XAML and you say, your width is this, your margin is this, or whatever, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Once we've selected our output device, we then transition to the print preview UI.
Okay.
That print preview UI requests a print preview page. So it requests page number one of the print view preview. During the pagination activity, we have informed the printing infrastructure how many pages are available. I.e. our document fits on one page, then it's only one page. And so the preview UI shows one of one in this example. If during pagination we determined that there were 12 pages of content, then we would have one of 12. And as we changed the preview number on here, we would get a new get preview page event that would pass in the index of the page that was desired.
Is the page actually rendered at that time, or when does the rendering occur?
So the page is rendered in memory, and we've supplied that via the set source into Print Manager, which is how it's able to display this print preview.
I see.
Now, for efficiency, what I would suggest is during the pagination process, you cache the output of all your various pages so that when you get these preview page events, all you're doing is reusing the work you've already done. You don't want to redo all that layout activity.
I guess it's the print document that has a get page or something like that?
Yep.
Okay.
Once we then hit print, we have add pages. So what this then does is turn around and say, okay, get the final renderings of these pages and pass them back into the printing infrastructure. So during this time, if we had 12 pages, we'd send back all 12 pages. And that is now sitting within Print Manager. It has all the content it needs in order to print.
And add pages is almost like get all pages.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, by the way, in that dialogue, I see where you have orientation portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any control over what you show there, the orientation portrait? What, you know, maybe your
No, that's all
needs...
coming from the device capabilities.
Okay.
So you can have the more settings, they will actually take you out to a more detailed view of the capabilities of the, whatever output device you've supplied.
Makes sense.
Should you change those, then you could, in actual fact, get a new pagination event be raised and have to go through and regenerate all your output because you may well have changed how everything occurs.
Right, because you just changed orientation to landscape.
Exactly.
Or something, yeah.
So may end up more pages.
So if you're ready.
Exactly. And so, as I say, it's not trivial. Then once you've hit print, then everything transitions over to the operating system. And when you create your tasks and so on and so forth, you can supply names and so on that can be viewed in the standard print spooler. So, that said, that's the visual. That kind of gives you a high-level perspective. Let's have a look at the code. And so you can see
pretty,
how this...
involved.
It is pretty involved. It has to be said. So let's start off with the detail page. So we have on the app bar a print button. So this is not required. You can do it by bringing up your devices and so on and selecting one of those as an output device. But this makes it handy for your users as a way to pop up the charm rather than having to do it directly.
Yeah, that's nice.
And so
I like that a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good pattern. So again, similar to what we did before for the unpin and pin, we just have a button there. This is the little Sego UI symbol character
For the little document.
For the little document inside there. And we're bound to a print command on our detail view model. If we look at the print command on the detail view model, we can see that it's pretty simple. It effectively sets up a property that's going to invoke this command or this method. And all this does is turn around and shows the print UI async. Now, notice that this isn't requesting to show the print UI. So it's not as if saying, are you sure you want to? It's actually going to show it. However, you don't want to do that if your application is in a snapped view state. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're only going to do this in a full screen environment. So that's as simple as popping up the print screen. If I actually run the application, I can show you that. Ba-ba-ba. Quick as a flash.
Love it. I love it. That's a beautiful logo.
So if I go into the detail page, so the detail page has turned around and said I'm available for printing. I hit print, and here I see my available output devices for printing.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the application. Stop that. So now if I scroll back up, so here is a section where I've outlined all of the printing activities. So here's our print doc. So I've created a member variable for that. Here is a container where I'm going to cache the page that I'm going to print. Okay. This print container is actually a control that's on the detail XAML. And the reason we have a control on here, right here, is in order to effectively render the print document, we want to put it into the visual tree. Mm-hmm. And so I can inject it into here. You can actually lay these things out totally in memory by doing a number of invalidates and updates and so on and so forth, but it's actually easier to attach it to a container that's already in the visual tree. We've got an opacity of 0, so it's never going to show up on the page.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's there so that we can inject in our document. So we come back to the view model.
Okay, so we're not printing what we see on screen and rearranging what we see on screen. We're recreating a new UI.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, creating a new visual element. We've got a couple of constants here, which are just additional page margins that we've set up just for giggles to show you how you can do that. Anyway, we have a register for printing method, and this is invoked as part of the instantiation of the view model. And first thing we do is we create a new instance of the print document.
Mm-hmm.
We then start binding ourselves to events that get raised by the print document. Get preview page, paginate, add pages,
okay,
so that we can handle those. And this is how we get communicated to via the document and the print manager to let us know various steps need to be performed on our side. We then request the print manager for the current view. Once we have that, we then subscribe to the print task requested. And now this event is raised when we want to view or when the print UI is displayed, if you recall. This is the little method that gets invoked when we click on the print button.
Ah, yeah.
So now this is the print task requested, which is raised from the print manager and is brought up when we show the print UI. During this, we get passed in the ability to create a print task. This print task, it's effectively, we talked about using deferrals before with some of the contracts elsewhere. Effectively, what we're turning around and saying is, we're going to do an asynchronous operation, and we don't want you to complete what you're doing until we've finished it. And so we request a deferral, and then we're going to communicate when we've completed that asynchronous operation,
yeah,
by raising the or invoking the deferral complete method. The reason that we have to do this is there is a constraint whereby we can only set the source for the print manager to the document source on the UI thread. If we don't, we get an exception thrown, invalid access.
So we marshal that back.
So we're marshaling that using the dispatcher to set that in the correct thread via this await capability. Okay.
If you hadn't used the deferral, as soon as you say await, it thinks you're done,
yep,
and it's over. So you have to use the deferral.
Absolutely, and so this would never get invoked. The other thing we do is we set up the child title, we set up the title of the print job. As noted here, this is what you would see in the Windows print spooler as the name of the print task. Okay? And so that's a little bit of a broader operating system integration that's going on there. Okay. Once that's done, the next action that the user can take is they select a printer in the print UI. That causes this paginate event to be raised, and we get passed in the paginate event arguments. This gives us access to print task options. Inside there is the get page description. This gives us the dimensions of the document to which we can print.
Which comes from the printer itself. Whatever the user just selected as the printer,
yep,
that comes back as the print options or print page description.
Yep.
So you can know what the margin is, so you can know what the width is.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Now we're creating a new instance of detail printing. This is the document we're going to print. And so this is a XAML control that has layout and has data binding.
And there's no reason somebody needs to look for this in their in the framework. This is something we create.
Exactly, and I'll show you that in a second. So we set the data context. We also push in page size and page width.
Nice.
So we start applying the initial elements of the layout. So let's go and take a look at detail printing. So this is the code behind, and we see that there is nothing in there.
It's serious.
If we look at the layout, what we see is the preview shows very little because there is no content injected in there. So let me scroll this up. What we can see is we have what looks like a regular page.
Mm-hmm.
It's a page, we have a grid, the grid name is printable area, note that later. We have some rows that are set up, we have a stack panel that we use to put in the SOAR logo, which is that image up there, a text block that's bound to the title. We have an image that's bound to an image source, and we have text block that's bound to description.
So all those bindings are very similar to the detail view, if they're exactly the same as the detail view.
Uncannily so.
Ah, you must be passing the same object to it.
Okay. Exactly, exactly. So if I now come back and look at the detail view model, what we can see is the data context is set to this child, which is exactly the same thing as the detail view is showing.
Ah, I see. That is the record to bind to. Got it.
Exactly. And so that's where we get our content from printing. Now, remember I said note printable area?
Yeah.
So what we're now doing is we're getting hold of that control.
Okay.
And now we start doing our sizing calculations, where we're going to turn around and take in the page size and subtract from that the imageable area. Now, this is something that gets passed into us and represents the area that we can write to on the document.
Imageable.
Yeah. It's a wonderful word, isn't it?
Is that a legit word?
I wonder. It is. It's in black and white. It's right there. Okay. And we can then apply our own margin factors as well. So these were the constants we defined above here. Left
and
top.
That's the margin that you want.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we're adding these to the existing capabilities, and then we're finding the maximum width out of these two calculations, and then the maximum height.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's basically, we now have a printable area that we can then subtract this margin width and margin height from our overall page height. Once we have that, we then take our page and we add it as a child to the print container. Now, if you recall, the print container is on the details XAML.
Right, because you want to add it to the visual tree so it'll
actually
render it up.
So we're now adding that as a child to that canvas element. And then we tell it to invalidate the measure and we tell it to update the layout. So that's going to tell its children, okay, how big do you want to be?
Yep.
We've set the height and width, so
yep,
the child now says, this is how big I want to be. And then the print container updates the layout by saying, okay, this is how big you can be, which allows the control to relay out its elements, which then allows us to turn around and say, okay, that's what we're going to print.
So we are to the point of we have built what the print is going to look like.
Yes.
The printout is going to look like. All right.
Now,
we haven't talked back to the printer yet.
We've done nothing yet. All we have done is calculated, okay, what's the dimensions of our print area, what it and shaped our content and sized our content to fit.
Yeah.
Now, it was at this point that we would then turn around and say, oh, damn, we can't fit everything on this page. We need to introduce another page and so on. And this is where it starts to get very complex. And as I say, we haven't gone into that here. But this is where the complexity really comes in from printing a multi-page document. We know because in our simple example, we only have one page. What I can do is turn around and respond back by setting a property on the document to set the preview page count equals to 1 and stated that this is just an intermediate preview. that it's not necessarily full quality. There are a number of different things we can turn around and say final if we want to. And there's no reason why we couldn't say final. Just wanted to be able to demonstrate that it's got a couple of different values.
And so that one that you passed in is where it's going to show page one of two.
Correct.
That whatever you pass there is that number.
Correct.
The of number. Got it.
So we've selected the printer. We've had this event raised. This event then completes. We then transition and show the print preview screen.
Mm-hmm.
The print preview screen then requests a page. So on get preview page is raised. In the event arguments, we have a page number. So this is the requested page preview that it wishes to display.
Yeah.
Because we know we only have one page, we just return back our UI element to that preview. And that's what then gets rendered in that preview window.
Okay.
Okay? So that's relatively straightforward. If we had multiple pages, then you would have some sort of a ordered list or some indexed list or whatever that you could then turn around and say, okay, I need page 3. And bring that back. So again, this is a relatively simple implementation if you've done all the legwork and cached your pages up here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Wowzers.
Once we've gone through the print previews, we can then hit print, or we can turn around and say, oh, I don't want to print this at all.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that, then all of this effort is wasted. Thanks very much, user. If, however, they hit print... Then we're going to...
This is why we show them the print button when they come in. We want them to use it.
Exactly.
We wrote
please.
It.
Please. Please print. Anyway, so then once we hit the print button on the UI, then this gets invoked. And what we're then asked to do is turn around and say, supply back every page that needs to be printed.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had a list, we could iterate through that list and keep adding those pages. We then say add pages complete. That then allows the job to proceed and send that to the printer.
Sort of like a deferral, only without deferral.
Exactly.
It's the flag that you're done. All
exactly. Right. It's a little bit of a different implementation. Yay for consistency.
So
I'm actually going to go back and run the application and go
let's
through
see
that.
It really will this really do it?
Who knows?
So if we set opacity to 1, we'd actually see the print preview appear, huh?
We could go and play around with that if we really wanted. We're going back to Norway again, but we could play around with that. So anyway, we're going to go into the detail. So here we are. Here's my print page. So I bring that up. He says bring it up. Bring up print. So here's my print UI. So I'm going to send it out to the XPS document. So think about this. The print UI has just been raised. We've raised an event into the print manager. The print manager has requested that it get the document source. The document source has now been supplied.
Got it.
We click on this. This is going to then send the metrics associated with this device into Paginate. Paginate is then going to read in the data source, going to create an instance of our document, and send it back.
This probably happens at light speed, but if this was a large project or a large record,
yep.
That pagination could take a little bit.
It could.
Yeah, okay.
And so now what we have is our print preview. And now we can see it's injected in the title. It's injected in the image that looks uncannily like the image over here.
Nice.
And the description.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see our data binding is working. We said there's only one page, so we've got one of one.
Right.
Displayed here. Let's go off the reservation.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Landscape. And there we can go. You see that we've gone through Paginate again. And you can see how we've changed the dimensions, and because we've used a dynamic flow layout in our XAML document, it has automatically refactored the layout of the content to take advantage of the landscape. Sweet. Love it when it works, huh?
It's fantastic.
Then when we hit print, we're going to say get pages, and we're going to add them to the print document, and it's going to send it out to the printer. We do that, and up pops the fact that it saved it as an XPS document. And
look
there
at
is
that.
Our print document in high fidelity, in color. It's real.
That is awesome. Really? It's fantastic.
Is.
I'm not being sarcastic this time.
I couldn't tell because you were still breathing. Okay. The only missing piece of this is, if you remember at the beginning, we requested the print manager for the current view. So when we navigate away from this view, we want to unregister. And so the final method that we have on here is unregister for printing. And what we're doing is we're letting go of our event subscriptions
right.
So that we're not hanging on to this view model. One of the key things, and we've mentioned it before in the previous sessions, is make sure that when you create event subscriptions that you unsubscribe unnavigated from.
Yeah.
That you want to let go of those resources, because in our first sessions we talked about garbage collection and how references are only collected by the garbage collector if they're free, they're released. If you leave these events subscribed, then there is an external reference to an object that the garbage collector will never release. Okay? And so make sure that you do these things.
Makes
and that is printing.
All right, so let's go on to more printing resources and some things that when other developers are watching this and they want to really get into it, first of all, they can open up our project and see what we're doing, right? That
Absolutely.
Really helps a lot. There are other resources as well.
So a great article that I found was by Jeff Blankenberg.
Yep.
And he did a series, 31 Days of Windows 8, and on his day 20 article, he really dove into the depths of printing. And he has an example that shows how you can use rich text blocks to manage printing and how you can calculate page overflows and work out how many pages you need during the pagination method. So if you're interested in that, I would strongly recommend you go and look at that particular article. It also shows how you can flow images and so on and so forth. It's a very rich example. The only thing that's missing from it is he's using static data that's already declared in the XAML document. And so there's an additional round of thinking that you'll need to do if you're going to use data binding.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the MSDN Printing Quick Start actually gives you all the basics of how to do this and does talk a little bit about how to do the pagination.
Which is tricky.
It is tricky.
Just hold on. Here it comes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, beautiful. So, that's printing.
That's printing.
Nothing to be sneezed at. Definitely going to be something you, not every app is going to be the app that needs to print. But when the app does come, you got to tackle it head on.
Well, typically, if you're building a line of business application, printing is going to be necessary.
Now, when we add other contracts, usually we go into the app manifest and we declare a capability. Is that the same thing with printing?
Nope, there's no cap to select for that.
Okay, so as long as you support it, there it is.
Exactly.
All right, makes sense to me. And no doubt it's when you handle those events when it shows up. Yeah. In fact, that's how settings works as well. And so let's take a second now and talk about how the settings contract also works for a project. Certainly, some apps are going to need printing. Most apps are going to need settings and about pages and things like that. And so when we talk about the settings contract, just like the printing contract, this is not a contract you have to declare in your app manifest. It's just one you need to enable. And you do it through the settings pane, where you had the printing UI. We have the settings pane, application settings.settings pane. And what happens is the user swipes over from the right. They open up their charms. And in the charms bar, they see settings, right? And so as soon as they select settings, that raises an event. And all we have to do is subscribe to that event. And that's suddenly you have settings, or at least you have the ability to interact with this settings dialog. And so the user swipes over, they click settings, application settings.settings page, command requested event is raised. If we handle that, we do it all right. And how do we do that? Well, we do that by creating a settings command. So every option in there, so for example, there's options and about, and then help, and then permissions and rating. Those two are native. But those three are all added individually as settings commands. It kind of reminds me of command buttons. Remember those where they were just a link? And that's what it is, basically. You give it the text, and then it shows the text. And you also give it a command or the function or the action that occurs.
A delegate that's basically going to be invoked.
Yeah. And so then the user selects options or whatever it is, and your action runs, and the rest is up to you. And so it works like this.
Does it give you the UI?
It gives you the settings UI with the list of options, settings, about, or whatever. But then when it's actually invoked, the rest is yours. You create the UI basically from scratch, right? In fact, this is another kind of thing that catches developers off guard, especially XAML developers who are reading JavaScript documentation.
Yes.
You know, they're looking for the flyout control. There is no flyout control. It's the pop-up control in XAML.
Plus one of our transitions.
Plus one of our beautiful transitions of in from the side. That's exactly right. And there's the guidelines out there talk about exactly how what the size should be and things like that. But again, that's up to you to create. It's up to you to kind of lay out and implement as well. It doesn't come free by any stretch of the imagination. All right, so let's look at how we subscribe to that commands requested. Again, the event is saying it. It's requesting the commands. It's requesting what it should show in that view. And so here I'm adding two of them, right? I'm adding an about, and where this is the most basic of all of them, right? So I say about, or it's, anyway, I'm keeping it in a variable, new settings command, and I give it a key. In this case, it's one. That's in case I have some and I can't tell them apart, or I don't want to recognize them by string or something like that. Anyway, it gives you the ability to put a key there. And then the text that you want to show, again, this would be hard-coded, and we could pull from our resources and have it localized. And then show about is just that method, whatever it is that's going to cause it to happen, the thing that is going to create that pop-up, reveal it to the user, and then interact with from there on. And then below it, we just do it again, right? Do it this time for options. We give it a key of two. We use the hard-coded text of options and then refer to show options as a method that it's going to invoke. We add that to the application commands. And then the rest is automatic from there. It shows it, and we just wait for the user to or not to select whatever command you've given it. So if they click on options, all of a sudden show options runs, and now the next part is up to us.
I noticed you've got a link at the bottom of the slide. Does that go out to one of your articles?
It does, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've built out a whole blog article on just settings alone. It goes into probably the same level of depth, actually, but you know, goes through a different set of examples and just more references. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Cool. Thanks. I'm glad you pointed that out. Let me show you. So I've written a settings helper because it's very repetitive. I love using the settings helper because I don't have to think about it. But I do want to point out that Tim Heuer has the Callisto project on GitHub, and it does the same thing in a couple others. Of course, he's on the XAML team, so he's building nice stuff, and this is a kind of a missing piece in the toolbox, and so he's kind of filling that. I'm filling it with the settings helper. His is far more rich than mine. I use mine a lot, though, because there's no references to use. So, let me just start up a new project and show you something cool. I'll say file new project. We'll select a blank one. And I like to, in the end, what's showing up inside that flyout or in that pop-up is just a user control, and that's that way you can contain all the logic. I mean, obviously it has to do stuff, and so I'll create a quick folder here. We'll call I'll call it contracts, and I'll match how we do it in our project that way. And I'll create a new item. This is just going to be a user control called settings, right? Just like that. Here's the settings. Now the size of the setting is very prescriptive. There's an exact width of a setting that's supposed to be. It's not 320, but it's pretty close to 320. So I like to set it up to be 320, 768 by 320, just so in my designer I have something to look at. I'll say the background of the grid is let's call it green. There we go. So we can there we go. All right, so this is just the beginning of it. There's a couple things that every setting has. So it obviously it has a title, but it also has that back button. So if I were to run our application, and I was going to jump over to the, in fact, I have to wait for it to load. There we go. And I was jump to settings. So it has the title at the top, but it also has this back button that when you click it, goes back to that settings UI, right? So that's really the only thing you have to implement that's kind of repetitive. And then right here is just a stack panel of all the things that you want it to do. And because it's a user control, all the logic is right there, and you don't have to worry about what it's interacting with. Okay, so let's just build that out real quick. I'll just build out this quick little columns in this grid.
So right now you're creating the top view where you're going to have the title and the button and so on and so forth. Top part of the view.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I'm going to do it in rows instead of columns because I just picked it wrong.
Exactly.
Stupid thing.
Stupid thing doing what I typed.
Yeah, Like, why is there no height on a column? Oh, because there's no height on a column. Dumb thing. All right, so rectangle, and to make it the right color, it's kind of up to you what you want to do. The way I like to do it is
two words: food coma.
Maybe fill is a solid color of doggone me not typing things right. Fill. And then in here, you just add a solid color. Color is black. And then its opacity is, say, like 0.25. That makes for a nice, take away this allowed drop. Makes for a nice, so it just changes the color of it, right?
And absolutely.
One way you're going to have to do it, one way or another. And then in there, I'll have a text block. A text block. And you could pick real easily from the existing styles. So I'll go over to the miscellaneous grouping of the properties of this text block, go to the styles here and look at what locally is available. And I've already got the page header text, which is perfect. That's exactly what I want. Page header text, I'll make the text settings, like so.
So again, we would often want to use UID and resources and so on.
That's exactly right. I would certainly want UID there. And then I will, what would make that easier? It'd be easier if it was in a stack panel. There we go. And then I could put a back button right here.
Yep.
And just like before, I have a, I can use the local style, and I can make this the back button style. Perfect. Boom. Now everything's laid out the way that I want it to be, right? And then I can add the click event, which is what I'll do here. I'll add a click event to this button, because all that this is supposed to do is to reveal the settings UI.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'll go into the click event here. Create a quick one back here. All right.
The ghost of Scotty appeared on the screen there.
Here's the settings pane. Is he? And you say show. Right. It's as easy as that. All right. Now the back button is implemented. As soon as it shows, it will dismiss the settings for me. I don't have to do anything extra. There actually may be very little code behind you have left here. All right. So now here's my settings. I'll go to my AppXAML. You were talking about subscribing and unsubscribing.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to that, let me add the settings helper. I almost forgot. Here's the settings helper. And to kind of drive the point home, I'm going to jump to my website to grab it. So this is my website. And I'll go down here on the right, or where all the helpers are. Here's the settings helper. And when I pull it up, it pulls up. Here's the source for it. I'll copy it and just drag it in here, or drop it in here right there. All right, there we are. I don't think there's any missing usings here. No, good. All right, nothing to do with the settings helper. It just needs to be in place. Now, when in the loaded or the launched event inside AppXAML, this is the right time to subscribe to settings.
Yeah, because you want your application to have it all across the board.
Everywhere. I would never unsubscribe because settings are always settings. An about page, let's say, is always an about page. In fact, let me go into contracts here. I'll say new item, user control. And this one I'll call about. I'll go into settings just to kind of steal it. Right. So I'll take the whole grid here. It's green. Go over to settings, which is right here. Or we go over to about. Paste it in. Change it so it's let's say red, so we can tell them apart as we go through them. And then I'll change its text from settings to about. So this is just the scaffolding.
To boot?
Yeah, it's just the scaffolding of what we need. But anyway, it's in place, right? Everything's good, and it still has the back button. And in fact, I'll need the back button
click handler,
won't I? Yeah, let me just grab that real quick. So there it is. I'll make sure that about has that as well. Of course, I could create a user control for this or a custom control
if
I was in the zone. I'm not in the zone. All right, so now back to AppXAML.
The food coma zone.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'll put it right here at the end. So this is where I handle settings. And we do all this in Splash, actually, you know, in our project. It's the right place to do it.
Because we want to delegate anything that could take any time to within our Splash screen.
That's exactly right.
This allows us to start up the application as quickly as possible.
All right, so the settings helper, let's see if I can capitalize it correctly and it'll find it. There we are. So here it is. I just added it, of course, and there's no extra dependency for it. and a new pointer. There we are. No, var. Oh gosh.
This is going to be a long 6 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so now the settings helper does all the stuff for you. It's going to invoke or instantiate your user control for you. It's going to create the pop-up that it needs to show. It's going to handle whether or not it's the right size as well. It's going to dismiss it when something else happens. All these things that you would just have to do because there is no flyout control, which you would think the flyout control would really help with all of this, but we only have the pop-up control, which it's the pop-up control and the transition.
So how does the helper know about the controls?
So much more. What's that?
How does the helper know about the controls you have?
Well, the helper it knows that it's an XAML project,
mm-hmm.
and I'm about to tell it.
Ah.
Yeah, there's one more line missing. Uh-huh. Yes, yes. So this is just me newing it up here so I can start to use it. And it actually reduces quite a bit of the work. So you say helper.addCommand. And remember, it was settings commands that we mm-hmm. needed. And so this is just a wrapper around for that. It's a generic method, and you pass in
the view type
contract.about, mm-hmm. in this case. And then the method arguments take in what text that you want. In this case, it'll be about. And then there are optionals. You can pass in the key if that's what you want. And you can pass in specific width. So that's a that's an enumeration because there are only two. There's wide and small, and mm-hmm. each of those are prescriptive guidance in the design guidelines. So you don't have to do those. Those are optional. And so that's done. It'll do all the setup for you there and handle the invocation when the user does it. And okay. So I'll just duplicate that and do the same thing for settings. And done. So that behind the scenes does all the work. I think it's worth probably just looking at it for a second to see how it's done, even though it's kind of designed so you don't have to look at it.
Most people out there want to peel back the covers anyway and have a look at these things, and if you give them source, they're going to look.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's 100% right. So the main action is right here, and if you look at it, it really is identical to the slide that we were looking at a few minutes ago, and where we create a settings command. And that settings command has the key, if there is one, has the text, whatever the user passed in, like settings or about, as well as this delegate that allows me to create a new instance of the user control, right? So I'm going to create a new instance mm-hmm. every time. I'm going to do that on purpose. And the only way I can do that is based on this keyword around generics, that allows me to say that it's new. So here I say what I'm passing in, remember it was add command, mm-hmm. what I'm passing in is a T, right? Yep. So I'm just passing in T. And the only thing special is it has to be a user control, of course, and it has to support
a default constructor.
A default constructor for instantiation. Yep. Anyway, it's all behind the scenes this way. Obviously, you can just steal from this or just use it outright. And I use it in a lot of different projects, and I know a lot of developers use it in a lot of projects too. And because it handles everything for you. There are no extra pieces. I'm going to run it now just so you can see what it looks like. All right, there's my logo. All right, so it's black. I guess that's kind of boring. But anyway, so I'll do window I. That brings up the settings or the information pane. It's not the settings pane. Or I could go directly to the charms and then click on settings, and then that would pull up the information pane as well. So you can see there's about, and there's settings. They're in the order that I created them in. I could switch them around. It's up to me that way. When I click on about, it instantiates that user control for me, puts it inside a pop-up, causes the pop-out to fly, changes its width, does all the things that it's supposed to. As well, here's the back button, just does the opposite. It's not behind this and hidden. It's actually dismissed. And then settings will do the same thing. So now I can have real easily about and settings and just keep on going, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, in the last course, right, yep. we had a module just talking about settings guidelines and good practices around it. All of those are still true, right? The fact that you want settings to take effect immediately, mm-hmm. the fact that
there's no save button that you're going to put on there.
Yeah, that there's no save button. You want to make it so that the defaults make it so users don't go into settings very often anyway, and so on,
yeah.
right?
I mean, bring up the main app and show things like the silhouette and so on and so forth.
Sure. So here's the main app, and so it has settings in about. And so if I go into settings, it has a handful of settings. Of course, the color of this setting is bound to the color of the rest of the application. And we saw where we could change the color, and as soon as we changed the color, it would immediately take effect.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a silhouette. So the silhouette helps developers. It's purely a developer piece. And when you enable it, it lays out the window silhouette for design, so it makes sure that you can have everything pixel perfect if you want to. We also have a little slider here for the size of data that we show. It's a lot faster just to load a few records, but we could back that out to show everything, so you can see all of the different jump starts you and I have done.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not the Microsoft account is there, and just keep going, right? Everything that you want would be
and
right
so it
here.
Makes an awful lot of sense that when you're building your application, you start thinking about those key configuration elements that you wish the user to be able to toggle, so that you can start designing this UI. And as you mentioned, there are two kind of dimensions to those flyouts, and based upon the types of settings that you're putting in there. So say, for example, you have authentication to a third-party service that requires username and password, and it isn't integrated into the live account system, you're going to need text box in there to be able to enter in those, those credentials, and you're probably going to need a little bit more room, so you may need the wider setting and so on.
Yeah, and I'll show you one other thing that's sort of interesting, and that is when I'm binding, so look at this little section right here, for example. This is whether or not the data is limited. Or here, this is the one we have, whether or not I show the silhouette. Of course, that was a toggle switch that mm-hmm. I was using. It's a real nice control. And I want to bind to that. So I go ahead and create a regular property. This is a CLR, a CLR property that is on that page, mm-hmm. but it is backed by a local setting. So application data namespace gives me both local setting,
yep.
Dictionary, as well as a roaming dictionary if I wanted these settings mm-hmm. to go across different devices.
So you're immediately writing those into the settings store as well as updating your CLR properties.
That's right. And I use the storage helper here. It's just another helper off my blog that kind of helps us to write settings, puts all the try-catches around it and make sure things are there. But anyway, what it does is it returns from settings this key that I've set up right here. And so now, as I interact with the control, it's updating the dictionary that is stored that's cross-session. So I can close the application, open the application, and it's still there. Right?
Yeah.
That's really important. And then when I go into, let's say I go into details, details then has I always forget where things are. Let's see, it's going to be
property changed? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah. Maybe it's in the silhouette itself.
Yeah, I think you subscribe in there and push it.
Yeah.
It's in the code behind. Behind of detail.xaml.cs is the silhouette section.
Gosh.
Detail.xaml, just scroll down. I think there's a collapsed region that says silhouette.
Really?
No, you're in the view model. You want the code behind.
Oh, I sure am. Thanks for saying. Okay, I was in the wrong page. You're absolutely right. All right, so right here is a listener. So as I'm updating the settings dictionary, at the exact same time, that settings dictionary will raise an event of property changed
mm-hmm.
or settings changed. And so I'm listening for that, and as soon as I hear that, I move it back onto the UI thread, just like you showed earlier, using the dispatcher, and then I just hide or show the silhouette based on whatever that setting is. And so I can put it right here. That's the way that I can, and here's that data changed, applicationdata.current.datachanged. That's the way that I can listen for whatever the setting is, and as the user makes that, I can have a real-time response. They don't have to click save. They don't have to do anything. I immediately respond to it. That's the best case and the best practice probably in 99% of the use cases. There is that 1% of what that setting does is either not possible, right? We were talking about if you cache your styles, you know, you're going to have to restart the app so you can't have it real time. Or what they might have asked for was something that is really intensive. Mm-hmm. And you can't have it so that they go back and forth and back and forth and back and wreck your machine. You have to have some sort of threshold of time or something that
Absolutely.
Passes.
Okay, so during this session, we covered two contracts. We covered the print contract and illustrated that there is a very rich printing capability that's available to you in the Windows Store applications.
Let me ask you about printing.
Sure.
If I wanted to use HTML to do the printing, can I do that even though I'm writing a XAML application?
From the using that print manager dialogues, I don't believe you can.
Okay.
Yeah, we're sending across a UI element. Now, That said, I don't see any reason why that UI element couldn't have a web view on it.
Oh, yeah, good point.
I don't know. I can't say empirically. I've never tried that. Maybe that's something we can test out. Maybe you can write a little blog post on about it.
Well, now that you've said it, I might want to.
Uh-huh.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good little thing to play around. So we'll find out, and we'll let you guys know whether that's a viable option, because you know, it's a somewhat attractive option.
Yeah.
So anyway, we talked about the printing contract. We talked about how for straightforward printing scenarios, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of a footwork you got to do in terms of subscribing to the events and so on. But, you know, it's fairly straightforward, and I think you can use our example there as a nice template to walk you through that. Then yeah. We also touched on the settings and Jerry's settings helper.
Yeah, that's right, and how quick and easy it is to throw up settings into
exactly.
your project.
Just throw them in.
Attach them.
Absolutely.
Barry's laughing. Both of them are the type of contracts that
yep.
don't have to be declared in your project.
Exactly.
They're just what have to be enabled. Listen for the correct event
mm-hmm.
and handle it and go from there, and you can enable the whole thing. Adds a lot of functionality. Printing makes your application more rich. Settings probably required for almost every application.
Absolutely. And so that wraps up this module. Break for 10 minutes, and we'll be back for Advanced Contracts Part 2.
I'm excited about that one.
I am too.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Cheers.
I hope it works. See you in 10 minutes.